This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education Tuesday night. Day two, Republican National Convention right there in Milwaukee. Johnny Lupinacci, neither one of us is there. But you know what? Right away, though, producer Jess in the studio on the ground, essentially, in the Milwaukee area, Waukesha to be exact. Jess, what are you seeing? What are you hearing that's coming out of the old Republican National Convention? Anything like, you know, the Minocqua Brewing Company potentially being there?
Well, nothing with the Minocqua Brewing Company, but what can you tell me about the Minocqua Brewing Company, Tim?
Oh, I'm just going to tell you, Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its crazy voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again. One beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. So what you're saying, Jess, is the RNC is not serving Minocqua's progressive beer.
It certainly is not, Tim.
So, Jess, what else, though? I mean, what's going on? Can you give us a sense of, you know, there's electricity in Milwaukee right now.
There's quite a bit of electricity in Milwaukee right now. There's quite a lot of media coverage. And if you want to catch things, make sure that you're catching the Civic Media Radio Network coverage every single day, 12 to 2 p.m. Todd Alba is down at the RNC. We also have quite a few hosts who are right in Media Row outside of the RNC who are bringing in their own coverage. And from 7 to 8 p.m. immediately after Busted Pencils, Todd Alba and Terry Bell, both of Civic Media, will be giving you a wrap-up of the day. What I've been hearing a lot of today is a lot of talk about the vice presidential pick, J.D. Vance, and a lot of concern coming in from our callers and texters about the Project 2025 platform.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about the Wisconsin's favorite senator, Ron Johnson? There's got to be a Ron Johnson. There's got to be a Ron Johnson story somewhere.
Oh, there
a big
is.
Big Johnson story coming up.
Well, apparently he said something he didn't mean to say. Should we take a listen?
Yeah, let's hear that.
Let's listen to what he didn't mean to say.
Today's Democrat agenda, their policies, are a clear and present danger to America, to our institutions, our values, and our people.
That sounds like he's not turned down the rhetoric at all. Okay, Jess, let's be honest, though, too. He didn't mean to give this speech he said now, right?
Oh, sure. He says that someone loaded the wrong speech onto the teleprompter. We've got a link to him saying that in the podcast description for today. I don't believe it.
Yeah, the whole idea, Johnny Lupinacci, you know, the last time you had a teleprompter speech and you noticed something was wrong, the inability to correct yourself in the moment and to not say something like this, that's the part where I think it's kind of silly. I was making this connection. I'm like, maybe he must not have been taught with the science of reading or something like that because he had an inability. I don't know. You know, Republican science of reading, it's all there. I don't know. Maybe there's something, but I don't know. That doesn't sound very toned down. Although, Johnny, I know you said, not that hard. It's not that harsh, though.
Well, Tim, I mean, he has a couple of things. Like, I'm curious. There's a lot of things I have questions about in this. And you know, it rings true to par for the course for a speech coming from Ron Johnson. I mean, it is in every way aligned with. And I know that we want to have some sensitivity because it is important to remember the like I talked about the end of last show, the rhetoric of political violence is connected directly to physical, you know, political violence. Violence begots violence. You know, this, though, does ring very true to me to the platform that most of the Republicans running stand by. They firmly believe the Democrat Party is their opposition. It is.
Yeah, it is.
It presents a clear and present danger to their dream, their vision of America.
Absolutely.
The institutions that when they talk about institutions, they're not talking about institutions the way we are, Tim, like public right. education is an institution. They're talking about like conservative values and they're very clear and their people. So this is not inclusive language. This is not, you know, so this to me rings par for the course. And I know it's difficult, Tim. I mean, all of media today and, you know, yesterday and on, you know, the wake of an assassination attempt needs to and is for the most part paying really close attention to the rhetoric, you know, and being really mindful that rhetoric of political violence is political violence. We talked about it last show. I talked about the ricochets mm-hmm. of that rhetoric are often physical violence. And so, you know, I think that it's important. It's also still important to present the news and to be fair and say, hey, man, this seems to me par for the course. So I'm a little bit befuddled because I'm like, dude, don't ever admit who did you just throw under the bus?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, maybe the wrong speech did get loaded up in the teleprompter. I will admit, not on our show, Tim, because it's just, you know, dialogue, but having had used teleprompters before, right? In speeches or in different situations where you're like having to really make sure those words are there. You know, if it was loaded up there, it would be to me, to be fair, pretty hard and distracting to not stick with the speech. It's a performance. It's a kind of things. Now, if it's like coming from the heart and not in teleprompter, that's a big difference. And so, you know, I was like, why are you admitting this? One, okay, cool. Thank you for your honesty. And two, I don't feel too like the rhetoric of political violence is too.
It's not over the top language.
And we do have strongly opposing views here. And I don't think that we're going to land on, nor should we land on, hey, Republicans and Democrats, you need to get together and be on the same page. That would be pretty devastating from most of us, why we have values that align and we hope are better represented by the Democrats, but are aligned in the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. So it's par for the course for me. It's a little bit like, okay, dude, you shouldn't have probably said anything about the teleprompter. but nonetheless, exciting times, Jess, in the studio for all these great hosts covering it live on the grounds. I'm seeing wonderful social media. And yes. Listener, big ups for listening closely to what's going on close to home and for our country. That's being patriotic because we should all be having lots of questions and eyebrows raised about Project 2025. And that's a big deal. So, Tim, what else? What do we got going on?
Well, I can tell you right now, right? Yes. We'll go right. Well, we got a great guest coming up on the show. But Mark from Prairie du Sac called in right away. And we're like sitting there going, okay, Mark, were you the one who did that to Ron Johnson's speech, buddy? Come on, Mark, admit it.
Oh, my gosh. Don't put that on Mark, our guy.
Hey, Mark, what's happening, Mark?
Any halfway decent politician should be able to come up with a speech if the wrong thing has come up there. You just say, hey, this is the wrong thing that's coming up here, and then speak from his heart. But I got the feeling in my heart that that was from Ron Johnson's heart, the hatred and the dismissal of the other in our state. That it's just sad that, you know, our society has reached a point where we're more accepting of more and more of us. That is a very good thing. And for him to introduce this fear and, you know, fear of the other is what Ron Johnson is all after. And there's a line in Ursula K. Le Guin's Left Hand of Darkness that fear is a good servant but a bad master. And Ron Johnson wants to fear to master us all, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. I mean, yeah, I see it there. You know, but this still too, Johnny, you got me thinking on this one going, but you know what? I mean, politics are politics. You know, this is not, you know, a nice social gathering here. These are people. This is democracy. Democracy is messy. Sometimes it can be very passionate. And so the idea sometimes of linking or creating, you know, language connections around how we portray who we're trying to beat, right? We are trying to beat them. And we put them in sometimes in terms that are sometimes that sound you know, warlike. I've got them in this here. Now, should we be more sensitive after an assassination attempt? I think that's what we're hearing right there. John, I know you got some.
I will say I'm on board for that. And what I'm going to say is if we are going to be more mindful and sensitive about this, then let's bring the thousands of kids who go to school in fear of a school shooting, the hundreds of kids who died in school shootings in just the last year, right? So, I mean, if we're going to start talking about this, then we're going to have a bigger conversation around violence and violent language and violent actions, because the Republican Party is, and I can say this definitively, has policies that do harm and violence to families and community. And so I don't know how you want to like soft shoe that. Let's find some friendly language around like, but that is in every way. And that's the conversation I think we do need to be having. That is their vision and dream and hope and what they believe to be our country. Is it? I would hope not. Has it become that lived reality, that nightmare for so many people? Think about queer communities. Think about Black and brown children. Think about people who are not born citizens of this country, right? I hate the language around this stuff, but the way they're represented in out by affected by policy and represented in the rhetoric and the actions of the Republican Party is in every way violent. And so it's really hard to soft shoe that and to say, okay, guess what? There was an assassination attempt. Ultimately, a very low moment for American democracy. Understood. Also, like we all have to, and I think it's agreed, we all have to be very mindful of the language we use, right? So I think that's important. Also, like we're not talking about a group that is here advocating for peace, unity, like inclusiveness. We're talking about, you know, a party by and large whose platform is harm to some for the benefit of a few.
Absolutely. I mean, and these are your NRA, Second Amendment. Sorry, J.D. Vance, bump stocks are just a distraction. Really, dude? This is the new vice presidential pick we're coming into, Johnny. I mean, we got so much going on, though, today. Jess, thanks for giving us an update from what's happening right there in the Milwaukee area. We got a great guest, though, Johnny, coming on. We're going to shift gears, move it back into the Busted Pencils topics. 855-752-4842 is the number if you want to call us. Jump on. Let's have some conversations. Mark, really appreciate you giving us a call from Prairie du Sac. And, yeah, when we get back, our guest, hey, I'm teasing this. Take a eugenics. What does that word mean? We're going to get into it when we get back. There it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Republican National Convention, yes, it's happening in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee. And civic media is all over it, Johnny Lupinacci, all over it. We are, though, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, talking about education. Great guest tonight. She's an esteemed author and educator whose work critically examines the lingering effects of eugenics in the modern educational systems. Her book, An Illusion of Equity, The Legacy of Eugenics in Today's Education, offers a powerful exploration of how historical injustices continue to shape contemporary educational practices. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Wendy Warren. How are you, Wendy?
I am well. Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here. And thank you so much for this show, Tim and Johnny, Johnny and Tim. The voices of teachers are so often left out of conversations about education, something I find downright insulting, not to mention that it creates a vacuum where there could instead be critical contributions. So thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you. And I got to tell you, thank you for reaching out. In fact, saying, hey, I'm doing some important work because there are so many people like you, but the idea too, because that's how you're on the show. You heard us, you reached out and we're like, okay, let's set up a little conversation. And we're like, wait a minute, you got to be on the show, Wendy Warren.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. So, you know, the book here, you've been putting this down. That word, before we get into some of the questions that I prepared and sent to you, I know that that somehow can sometimes be seen as inappropriate in today's context. just making fun of what happened with President,
right.
You know, but eugenics, how do people approach that word when you have that in your book? Is that a word where people go, wait, that word's too strong, we don't do that anymore? I mean, just tell me the choice of, I know where it's going and how you're working with it, but I mean, tell me some of the reactions to using eugenics, the word, in a title.
I think people are surprised, just like I was surprised when I learned about eugenics way too late. And I'll talk about that a little bit more, but I'm just amazed how late I learned about it. It's a hidden story in our country. And because it's a hidden story, I think we can't see the threads of it that still remain, or maybe how it echoes in current practice and policy. So when I started touching on that in the research that I did about large-scale standardized testing, I was appalled.
I know. And see, that's it, because you look at it and you're like, wait a minute. So just so you know, quick, eugenics, this is a, I don't even want to say it's a debunked science, because it was never a science. It's a debunked racist attack that's tried to say that certain characteristics and intelligences are measurable in these really weird way. And people are like, I think I remember hearing about eugenics with Nazis and Hitler. Yes, that's where you heard it. In fact, that kind of science of, you know, the great Aryan race was supposedly provable through a science, and that was eugenics. And now, though, I've also had people going, and wait, standardized testing, you mean like the Iowa test I took and so-and-so? You're saying there's racism in that test? Wendy, the answer is,
well, that's what I'm here to talk about. Yeah, I mean, starting with, I'd been a teacher for 25 years, right, in K-12, and I started seeing test results that didn't fit what I saw in the classroom. And so when I moved to teacher education, I saw the same thing at the college level. And I was so disturbed by this mismatch between what I saw, the test scores, and what I lived with students every day, that I had to find out what was going on. And so I dug into why large-scale tests were developed, and I was shocked at what I found, because through all my levels of education, no one had ever highlighted the fact that there had been a strong eugenics movement in the U.S. at the same time the ideology, as you said, grew in Nazi Germany. And nor did they mention that large-scale testing model was created by eugenicists for eugenic purposes, that is, to prove that the white, wealthy Christian men who were in power deserved to be in power because they were the most intelligent. So testing was developed as a way to justify and reinforce a social hierarchy based on the idea that these groups were superior to all others. Leaders hoped that proving this, right, would prevent dissent and also justify practices that reserved resources for those that the tests deemed most worthy.
Mm. Johnny Lupinacci, you think about this, and I can hear Wendy in this. Yeah, today's high-stakes standardized testing, what is its purpose? If people are like, well, it sorts ranks and moves people in and out on a continuum, and it still does this along ways that we can trace back and say that eugenicists influence, and influence isn't even the right way. The eugenicist development of large-scale standardized tests, it's still sorting people out based on a debunked racist approach into how we do this. And so the effects are not just historical, the effects are current. And Johnny, I know you've seen this happen lots of different places.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I love this. I love that Wendy's on the show today. Thank you, Wendy, for doing this work, for this research, for bringing this to Busted Pencils, but to teachers and people who are interested in, you know, education, especially in policies. And, you know, like, for listeners out there, Wendy's book is great. It explains the historical connection that she's making here between, you know, eugenicist logics and test-based policies, and these especially high-stakes test-based. So Wendy put it really succinctly for you, but you think like, wow, that's a pretty strong, you know, that's a pretty strong statement to make. Well, you know, get into the book, listen, get the book, Illusion of, you know, of Equality. It's a great read because it takes you into that research that Wendy said, you know, I learned about eugenics way too late. And then I learned about these connections in a way that, Wendy, thank you for doing your civic duty and being an educator for all of us to make that argument strong, because as we teach that, you know, add that to the repertoire of critiques of high-stake tests. You know, this is a really strong and I think really sound information base to have a strong opinion about high-stakes tests. So I love, you know, you're essentially, you know, critically examining social hierarchies and how they continue to exist in our policies. Can you share for our listeners a couple of the examples? You know, because we are familiar with it, Tim, Johnny, and some of our callers, like we're familiar with, high-stakes testing. And it also is pretty much, you know, not even a relic, but an institution of racism still alive and well. But can you give some specific examples for our listener of how this plays out in schools?
Yeah. So first I'll back up just a little bit more, but I will also say it felt like a responsibility to write this book for the very reasons that you said. So this statistical model that was used to create test scores was developed so that data on intelligence could be easily collected and reported, with the goal of promoting both eugenics and testing as sciences, right? So that allowed the model to be viewed as objective, and they hoped that that is the way that scores would be considered true. So even though most people's views about eugenics have changed over time, largely in the aftermath of the Holocaust, that view of the truth that could be revealed by test scores has remained much the same, and so does the demographically divided hierarchy that the scores create. So
Wendy Warren, Wendy, I just got to get you because we're going into break here. Wendy Warren is our guest, An Illusion of Equity, the Legacy of Eugenics in Today's Education. We're breaking it down, Wendy. We're going to come right back when we get back more on her book. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Our guest, Wendy Warren, she's the author of the new book, An Illusion of Equity, The Legacy of Eugenics in Today's Education. Wendy, I know Johnny threw out a question to you there with like seconds left in the last segment, talking a lot about, you know, the statistical model and how these things are based on this. Again, so high stakes, today's modern high stakes standardized tests are still heavily influenced by eugenics. And you were giving us some more breakdown and details in that.
Examples of how it plays out in schools. Yeah. Today, which is really helpful. Sorry, Wendy, the half hour break cut your explanation short, but we could pick back up there, you know, for our listeners. This is a strong claim. The evidence is there. It's in your book. It's clear. But for folks listening, they're like, okay, come, like, give us the examples. How's this play out in schools?
All right. So I'll just say, as I began to learn about the development of the model, I kept bumping into things that I couldn't believe were true. Like, this is how the tests are put together? So I kept checking the sources again and again, and I kept finding that they, in fact, were true. So no one then or now agrees what intelligence even is. And if we can't agree on what it is, how can we possibly measure this, well, this non-thing as if it has volume? Well, of course, we can't measure what we can't even define. Yet that was the eugenicist goal. When you stop to think about it, it's really absurd. But almost as absurd as what came next, which is in trying to puzzle through this impossibility, testing's developers looked to the stars. They figured, after all, that astronomers had developed a statistical model to indirectly measure the distance to stars, a feat that had once seemed impossible. And while astronomers knew there would always be a lot of error in their tests, they relied on collecting so many measurements that at least some of the error would be washed out, they hoped. But in the end, when all the measurements were graphed, the shape resembled a bell curve, and astronomers assumed that the numbers clustered around the middle, or the mean, were most likely to be accurate. They knew that they'd never be truly accurate, but that was the best they could do. And believe it or not, despite all the inference and extrapolation, that's the model eugenicists chose as the basis for creating large-scale test scores to presumably measure human intelligence. But a star, of course, is an actual entity whose location could be pinpointed if it could ever be measured directly. Intelligence certainly is not. And in fact, the psychometricians who create tests even today are quite clear that there's no way to know what a test taker's true score would be. It's just something unknowable. So the theory they created to justify the developing model just worked around that fact. They simply forged ahead, creating tests that produced bell curve shaped results and assumed that intelligence might be distributed in the human population along a bell curve. They could see that the bell curve was quite useful for their purposes because it spread scores in a way that would help them place test takers in rank order from highest to lowest. And right from the start, the testing model they created produced results that supported eugenic ideology because white people, right from the start, scored higher than all others. These were the results they expected, and so they believed they were true. So what I just described is the base of the model still used to create every kind of large-scale test.
And you're talking about this too. I hear a normal distribution, a bell curve. I'm just seeing this too, going back. And you used another word too, which is defined as psychometrician, right?
Yeah.
That's a fancy word for that's a person who understands making tests.
Right. Psychometrician. People who make them.
They're the test-making people. They're the pro-test-making people. So a psychometrician, but a normal curve. And people, if you remember that, listener, that normal curve is that kind of upside that U, and you see that where in the middle of this cluster. And I remember having a statistics professor who absolutely hated all of the eugenicists. And he would say, you know, there's absolutely nothing normal about a normal curve.
Right.
It's pure fiction. To make things create and fit in a normal curve requires statistical hocus pocus.
Yes. And even to assume that there's a human norm, right? Think about that assumption, right? So we can get into the weeds really quickly. And so for people who want details and source information, please read the book. But I do want to emphasize that what I said earlier, that test results are produced. Right? Mm. They are not revealed truth. So my reading made it clear that psychometricians, the people who make tests, are very aware of that. They say that test scores alone should never be used to make critical decisions, right? As the sole basis of decisions. Just like with early astronomy, the scores the model produces are just the best they can do. Yet from No Child Left Behind onward, policymakers are requiring educators to treat scores as if they are truth by using them as the basis for most important educational decisions about students, about teachers, and as measures of school quality. So,
well, there it is. While we're hearing this great work from Wendy, every damn busted pencil, same time, the bell rings. And what does that bell mean? Means democracy in action, folks, always linked to a core democratic value. Couldn't be lower hanging fruit today. All the good work here, the great research and the lessons that Wendy is sharing with us around the core democratic value of equality, talking about the ways that high stakes testing is not only rooted in racism and eugenics, right? Which is one of those logics of utilizing science inappropriately to make a claim that racism is somehow, you know, inherent in the system, natural. And we know that this is a social construct and it goes against the core democratic value of equality. Today's democracy in action is Wendy's work on the inequality of high stakes testing, right? Equality is where everyone should get the same treatment, regardless of where their parents or grandparents were born, their race, their religion, or how much money they have. Citizens in a democracy all have political, social, and economic equality. Wendy's work is paramount to us educators and anybody who really is a supporter of not only democracy, but equality as part of that, really understanding how test-driven policies, you know, test-driven classrooms and school communities in every way don't support equality and thus don't support democracy. Wendy, thanks for your research. We're going to get back into it because it's really wonderful for us defenders of democracy to have strong footholds like your work to say, you know what, folks, we know these tests aren't working well. And here's some of the things that they do that are against the very principles of why we come together in community schools. Thank you, Wendy. And listeners, thanks for tuning into today's Democracy in Action, Equality with Wendy Warren.
Yeah, man. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. It is, yeah, that Tuesday night. We are here with our guest, Wendy Warren. Wendy, we got a great caller, though, Joanne, because she's got a question, I think, very specifically for you in the conversation. Joanne, what's happening, our friend?
Great discussion. Just would like to ask a point about not just high-stakes testing, but competitive sports, which have, as of late, become very scientific. I mean, my gal students are telling me about the way that they're measured on absolutely every aspect of their being, even their periods and all of that. And all of this information goes into whether or not they're going to be picked for the next meet of, you know, whatever, a gymnastics meet. And I'm just wondering if the two are reinforcing each other, the competitive sports, which have eugenics bent to them, and, of course, the high-stakes testing. Again, great, great call, great discussion.
Joanne, thank you so much for your call. Okay, Wendy, we're going to give that one to you right away.
No idea. I've never thought of making that connection before, and I'm a person who loves to make connections. But I no idea.
Johnny, you got any thoughts on that one?
No, I mean, I love the conversation here because, I mean, the dots connect, right? I mean, these high-stakes tests, they're rooted in logics that if we don't understand their roots, we don't know the histories, we don't know the connections, then it seems really disconnected when we say something like institutionalized racism is still undermining equality in our schools. We can't talk about our care for all children when we're actively participating, you know, in things that work against the success of all children. And if fundamentally don't start from the premise that every learner in this country, every learner in the world, every human being, right, has not only intrinsic value, but is capable of learning, right? And so that is a premise that we're committed to as one human rights advocates, but as you know, educators. So this week we've been talking a lot about, drawing on last week's show and past weeks, about like social justice education, especially, right? That have commitment, patience, right? And humility. And so thinking about this, like there's really good evidence here, Wendy and Joanne, thanks for bringing it up too, that like this stuff is really related and really connected, and understanding it is a step towards taking action to not reproduce it. It's like when you know better, we can do better. So Wendy, that kind of brings us to, before we let our listeners remind them where they can read more of your work and continue to learn and act it, what can we do? Like what are recommendations and changes we the listeners and the learners here can do as leaders of learners?
You need to unmute, Wendy. There you
Thank
go.
You. Oops. there's a couple of things. I love to envision a different future. So this is my favorite thing to talk about. So here's the thing. Nothing about teaching and learning relies on comparing students to each other. We don't need to create a hierarchy or put students in rank order at all. Testing mandates are relatively new, right? I was teaching before they were in place. There are many more effective and useful ways to assess student learning than using large-scale tests. It used to be that schools were expected to be ready to meet the needs of any student who walked through the door. There was no such thing as kindergarten readiness. The idea that all children should reach certain standards at a certain age works against what we know about human development. Standardization is for an industrial model, which I guess was created for efficiency, but a practice is only efficient if it helps us meet our goals. So an important question is, what are the goals of public education? It seems to me that in our diverse nation, at least part of that answer has to do with equity. And the definition by the National Resources Defense Council is my favorite. It's short. It says, equity is just and fair inclusion. An equitable society is one in which all can participate and prosper. The goals of equity must be to create conditions that allow all to reach their full potential, like you were saying, Johnny. What if that were the goal of education? To create conditions to allow each person to thrive. So something I like to think about, for most of human history, people learn by observing the world and all its beings. So what if classrooms, schools, and districts operated like ecosystems rather than as hierarchies? In an ecosystem, a web of interconnection, every being plays an equally critical role, yet each of those roles is different. And another cool thing, the health of a forest is measured by its diversity. Can you imagine all that might be different if we measured the health and strength of human communities in the same way?
Oh, Johnny Lupinacci's loving that one because he is always coming down on diversity being the absolute essentialness for us to thrive. Our guest tonight, Wendy Warren, her book, An Illusion of Equity, The Legacy of Eugenics in Today's Education. Wendy, where can we go and get this? Anywhere? Amazon, tell us where to find your book.
Yeah, University of Kentucky Press is the publisher, but all the publishing outlets have it.
You can all get it right there. So check it out, Amazon. We'll have a link to it in the podcast, too, for everybody listening so they can get that book. Wendy, thank you for busting pencils.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
When we get back to Johnny and Tim breaking it down, busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, you can call us, though. It's 855-752-4842. And L.A. Tom, we know you're out there. We'll get you when we come back. That sounds like the theme song of the Republican National Convention. How many walls can you put up? How many guns? It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Great guest, Wendy Warren, her book, An Illusion of Equity. Check it out. L.A. Tom, though. L.A. Tom has been hanging out, holding on the line. L.A. Tom, what's happening, our friend?
Hey, guys. First off, I'm sick, so I haven't been able to call in. I wanted to call Johnny out on something. Johnny, you sometimes do this where you say Democrat Party rather than Democratic Party. And just wanted to rib you a little bit on that to make sure that you
I got to get it right. It's the Democratic Party, sometimes referred to as the Democrats. That's slang, but it's the Democratic Party. Thank you, Tom. You know, we're glad you're here. And, hey, man, I'm glad you're feeling better, my guy.
Yeah, I hear that almost like just a ting in my ear where because they did that years ago because they wanted to make it sure that people thought of the Democratic Party as the RAT, R-A-T, and that's why they did it that way in history. I think it's really interesting that you're talking about this eugenics thing because years ago, God, probably in the 80s, the TV show Different Strokes actually did an episode on this where they were showing the difference between, why, Todd Bridges and Gary Coleman, Willis and Arnold could not do well on a test because they were more geared towards white students. So I think it's really interesting that we're sitting here 2024 and we're still kind of having the same conversation, tells me that we really need to be moving forward in terms of this.
L.A. Tom, thank you so much, man. I kind of lost you there in that last second, but think about that though, Johnny. He's saying all the way back to the 80s, Different Strokes. I remember that. What you talking about? Willis. That's a little Gary Coleman imitation. Anybody's trying to set that there. But yeah, the fact that we've, you know, this is not something that we just all of a sudden figured out right here. The idea, though, that it's so hard to move people away from that standardized high stakes test and the results that they produce. You know why? Because it's cheap and it looks efficient and it looks scientific and people continue to do it. I would, though, challenge people on going, it's not that cheap, because if it was that cheap, can you imagine? Pearson is not in the business of not making money. So
I think you're being too kind.
I know.
We're still doing it because of two things. It keeps the people who have historically been in power in power.
Absolutely.
It presents the argument that it's natural some way that all these young men, all these white young men are somehow just doing better than everybody else. Well, there's some quote unquote science around it. It's bogus science. It's
bogus.
Not scientific consensus. It's not the science that Dr. Ethan Siegel tells us about when he comes on the show. You know, it's a logics rooted in eugenics, right? To help explain and rationalize inequality. Also, Tim, we continue to do it because there's a lot of money to be made. Mm. So, you know, there's a whole industry. We get into that as we talk about this more on future shows. But we got a caller, Susan, calling back in to talk about testing. Susan, what's happening?
Oh, my gosh. This is a subject that's been gnawing at me for a long time. I hated standardized tests when I was in school. A lot of my kids didn't do well. My own children didn't do well with standardized tests. And I really would like to see the educational system become more integrated so that there's a lot more group learning there's a lot more group learning time. So because children teach each other. Oftentimes, right. If you're in a group and you don't know something, somebody else can show you how to do the problem or how to solve this or what that word means. But yeah, I mean, I was always very good in English, but I wasn't good in math. And I failed geometry. But you know what? I used geometry when I had my own landscaping business because I had to figure all these things out. And I can do algebra in my head now. I can do geometry. So there you go. It's like, it was such a problem for me in school because I had such math anxiety that it was really prevalent, but nobody sat down and at that time they didn't take you aside and say, well, you know, it's okay. You know, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, that's just all I have to say.
Wow. Susan, think about that too, to put it out there is the whole idea that our intelligences are actually shielded a lot there too. And Johnny, we hear about this, which is, you know, not just math anxiety, but when it comes to high stakes tests, that high stakes testing test anxiety has an absolute scientifically proven influence on the results. There is science on that.
Well, and I love Tim, Susan, thanks for calling. Thanks for bringing it up, you know, and especially listener out there who's saying, yeah, I hated those tests. And you know what, here's some evidence that they aren't just something that you, Susan, hated or your kids didn't do well on. I mean, this is a common experience. Again, Tom reminds us, we the people, right? So it's up to us to share these experiences. And then for folks who listen, and we know we have listeners who are closely connected to education policy and the school leadership, to standing out. Remember that theme, 20 lessons from the 21st century. Stand out and take action with information. And here's the information that testing, high stakes testing, isn't just historically rooted in, but it continues to push forward racist ideology, logics of eugenics. And come on, 2024, we ought to be able to do better. And I love Susan sharing that real time use of math.
I know.
As a geometry teacher in me, you know, I melted a little bit. Thank you, Susan, affirming we do use it. And you know what? We use it on the job. And like Susan said, algebra, being able to do algebra in her head, she was capable of doing that as a young student too, but yes, not in the context of schooling. And that's far too many students. Bobby texting in, when I was taking a graduate course for special education certification in 1968, we were actually taught and tested on our knowledge of the IQ scores for, and I'm going to put these in quotes because we don't condone this language, but I know what Bobby's saying, for morons and idiots. You know what, Bobby, like we've come a long way, but we've changed the language, but we're still sort of stuck in those logics and we'd like to see better. Tim, as we're wrapping up, you know what's special about every show, besides being able to chat with you and Jess and all of our great listeners and guests, is Busted Pencils is sponsored by Minocqua Brewing Company. Minocqua Brewing Company, making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check them out at minocquabrewingcompany.com, where you can get your progressive beer. Can't wait to see you tomorrow with Educators Amplified. Listeners, we appreciate you. Let's go.